Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host Shivraj, and on this podcast, I speak with founders, investors, and domain experts from the Indian Valley trying to understand the art of building a legendary company. In this episode, I speak with Raj Sarkar, a marketing legend from Silicon Valley who was the ex-CMO at 1Password, Atlassian, and Google. In today's ecosystem, while there are unending trade secrets to the world of B2C marketing, B2B marketing remains to be a black box. Raj has had a very interesting journey in the world of marketing, standing out significantly in the Silicon Valley ecosystem. I chat with him through the episode, uncovering his learnings from being an incredible marketer. In the next couple of minutes, I ask Raj about his journey to breaking in to marketing, about his day-to-day as a CMO, and in the process, uncover what it means to crack it as a marketeer, what skills are required and can be learned, and how to navigate a career in marketing. This is an absolute goldmine of lessons when it comes to enterprise marketing, and there could be no better person to share insights on the subject. Before we get started, here is a quick word on our sponsor for the episode. This episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast is presented by Stride Ventures, which is one of India's leading venture debt funds, becoming synonymous with innovative startup financing in India. Stride Ventures provides comprehensive solutions going beyond venture debt to cater to distinctive challenges faced by high growth and inherently strong businesses backed by leading institutions. The fund has a portfolio of over 60 plus diversified companies, having deployed more than 1,500 crore rupees to date. In just over 2 years, Stride Ventures has emerged as the preferred venture debt lender in the Indian ecosystem. To know more about this phenomenal fund, visit strideventures.in, that is spelled as STRIDEVENTURES.IN. And with that, let's dive in to the 8th masterclass of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast with Raj Sarkar. Thank you so much, Raj, for joining me. Very delighted to be hosting you.
I'm so excited to be here, Raj. This is my first podcast for India. I've done a lot of podcasts here in the US, but it's great to talk to, you know, people from my home country. So I'm really excited talking to you today.
Great to hear that, Raj. And it's great to be seeing and observing the work you've done over the years. I think this serves as an inspiration to many future marketers who want to lead marketing roles at companies at the helm of it. You've had a stellar career, of course, and we want to decode much of it. But if you had to start with a trip down memory lane, we'd all love to know how your tryst with marketing began. As somebody who did undergrad in India, you went abroad, you, of course, had the MBA from Michigan, and you've done a bunch of things over the course of time. If you had to just take us through just early influences in life, what got you interested in marketing and how you broke in, I think that'll be very, very helpful in terms of context and it'll set the ball rolling.
Right, right. So I came to the US with an engineering degree, and my first job in the US was as an engineer, actually. I did hardcore software engineering. I wrote code which ran on routers and switches. This is in the early 2000s. So people who are familiar with like TCP, IP, actually, I wrote protocols which ran on switches and routers. So what happened is when I was at this company, the product manager left of my team. And, you know, I kind of stepped in a little bit, like doing some of the product management stuff. And a big part of your product management job is to, you know, external facing, like talking to customers and things like that. I really enjoyed that. And at that point in time, I was in an H-1B and I was like, okay, I think I should go and try out something which is non-engineering, because that's kind of like, I felt like it was in my DNA. I'm also a very social person, like an outgoing person. And I'm not saying that engineers are not social or outgoing, but I didn't feel like I want to spend the rest of my life in a cubicle. So I basically decided to go to business school. So I was in, like you said, you touched on it, I went to business school in Michigan for 2 years. And that's how I moved from engineering to marketing. Jiraj, I always say this joke that I moved to the dark side, because as engineers, we always used to make fun of the marketeers, and then being on the other side and, you know, looking at like what marketing does, I have really, really enjoyed my career in marketing, you know, for the last 15 years or so.
Oh, that's phenomenal. I love that. I think it's very interesting how you chose to experiment at a time when I'm not sure. I think product must have been the in thing in those days. Maybe you can also elaborate more on why the marketing itch in your skin, right? What was it like? How did you end up breaking in? Because these sort of transitions seem extreme in nature because you went from one end of the pillar to the other. So maybe if you can help us decode that, that helps.
Yeah, sure. So initially, actually, when I was at Michigan, my internship was at Amazon, and I got hired as a technical product manager intern at Amazon to work on Amazon S3. Now, the thing with Amazon is they hire you as a PM, but PM and PMM is like kind of the same for them. So one of my teams was basically to figure out the launch strategy for S3. At the same time, work as a product manager. And I remember, like, after my experience at Amazon, I was like, oh my God, this is so close to what I was doing before I went to business school. So I want to really put myself out there. Right? And this is the reason I decided to join Cisco, because I was hired as part of the small business team. The way I looked at Cisco, you have read this book about this 10,000 hours of training. I look at Cisco as basically where I completed my 10,000 hours of training. And why the transition made sense is because I only changed the function. The industry still remained the same for me, right? Which was pre-business school and post-business school. So it was much easier from my perspective to break into marketing, like a new function, but keeping the industry, kind of the same, because I understood that industry to some extent. So I was there for 4 years. It was a great experience. I worked in like different functions of marketing. And then I was like, maybe I should leverage my engineering background and go more into product marketing. That's how I actually, landed at Google. At Google for 2.5. So Google, interestingly, it's a PMM role, but it's kind of you do everything, which is similar in Atlassian as well, right? They call it a PMM because product marketing is the primary focus, but you get exposed to all different kind of functions of marketing. So when I was, usually coming from an engineering background, people expect that you're analytical. You think with your left brain. And then the shift actually happened in Atlassian when I started enjoying more the creative side of marketing. So it was a grad, as you can see, it was a gradual process. Like, I came to the industry first, broke into marketing, and then started with product marketing because coming from an engineering background, product marketing made more sense, and then broadened my perspective, got exposure to different aspects of marketing, and that kind of paved the path to get into a CMO role, at Palo Alto and 1Password.
Got it, got it. No, that's super interesting to know, and I love those transitions. Before we continue, I think since we're going to use the word marketing multiple times through this conversation, if you had to go very layman, very basic, right? Like, what do you even do on the job? If you had to just give us a quick rundown in the simplest way possible, especially because you're off also like some of these companies are very enterprise first, right? Consumer marketing almost comes naturally to most people, but enterprise marketing not as much. So if you had to give us a rundown of some basics, right? Like hygiene checks, what would those be when it concerns a marketer at an enterprise role doing some B2B marketing?
I really loved, I think, what we had as part of our, tagline we used to use at Google, and I tell it to my team all the time. Like, in a very basic definition of what marketing does, know the user, know the magic, connect the two, right? Now, the magic is basically what you're talking about is the product. Now, this applies whether it's a B2C product or a B2B product. That's your primary job as a marketeer. So I really like that definition because it's very simple and it's very easy to understand. At Atlassian, we used to say our primary job is to bring in customers into the company. Because again, Atlassian started off with there was no sales team who would go and like hunt customers. So it was primarily marketing's job to bring in customers, into the company. So that I think that's basically it. Like, your job as a marketeer is very simple. Understand your product really, really well. Understand your customer really, really well, and then connect those two together.
Got it. Fair enough. That helps. As I was also framing my last question, I realized that some of these companies also had like a dual angle to it, right? In fact, most of them, if I'm not wrong, Google, of course, has an enterprise solution, but there's so many open end users, consumers at the end of it, individuals. Same for Atlassian. There's so many developers and there's, you know, teams using it. And same for the one password journey and multiple ones in between. How has your framework shaped up over the years when it comes to consumer marketing vis-a-vis business to business marketing? Like, is there a major fundamental difference or do the principles remain the same? You tweak it as per the use case, etc.
That is a great question, Devraj, because I talk about it a lot. If you go 20 years back, how B2B marketing used to operate, and now that has changed drastically, fundamentally. I think a few things which is basically caught, if you look at from an environment perspective. Number one, 20 years, but internet is new. People forget. It's like the last 20 plus years, basically, internet came into existence, right? Smartphone came into existence in the last 15 years. All this didn't exist 20 years ago. Now, the way you used to sell to a B2B buyer 20 years ago versus what you sell right now has fundamentally changed drastically. And what internet has done is basically made it equal whether you're a startup or an enterprise to reach a buyer. That is the number one shift. Number two shift, consumerization. Nowadays, more and more end users are opinionated about which apps they want to use in a B2B environment. It's becoming fundamentally very hard for convincing your employees to use a particular app if your employees basically hate that, right? So that's the whole concept of PLG movement came into existence because of those primary reasons. And the number three fundamental shift which has happened is millennials and Gen X, they are going to become the primary buyers, B2B buyers in the next 20 years or so. And this is the Facebook, the TikTok generation. Whatever way you used to talk with B2B buyers 20 years back is not going to work in the next 20 years. So I feel like the B2C and B2B marketing is kind of converging to some extent. A lot of the B2C marketing tactics you see getting fundamentally being used in B2B marketing as well. And I had a good vantage point because, like you mentioned, like majority of the products I worked for basically started with the consumer angle, and then you took them to up market, right? Gmail was exactly like that. Google Hangouts, Google App Engine, you started by selling it to developers, right? Trello, Bitbucket. I mean, so that is what I see, like, you know, a fundamental shift. And I talk about it a lot, like how you need to, your marketing needs to become more human. You need to be talking to, because people always say, you used to say these things like B2B marketing. Oh, you're talking to the enterprise customer. It has to be like serious, right? It has to be serious, but that has fundamentally changed.
Got it. I think that's super useful. That also begs the question that when the industry is moving at such exponential rates, what do you as a marketer do to, if not keep up with trends, define them, right? So much of marketing becomes about becoming the front runner in things or setting trends. Is there a framework that you've applied to yourself that helps you keep up with what's happening? How do you tweak your mindset as time progresses?
Yeah, I think I read a lot, Chavraj. I think it comes from my, you know, Indian upbringing. When I was small, I used to read a lot. I basically give it to my mom and dad for, you know, basically instilling that habit in me. And even now, I read a lot. And there are a few things which actually really helps me a lot. And people ask me all the time, like, oh, how should I know what's going on in the industry? I don't know, have you heard about Strategery? Okay, so Strategery is basically, it's a subscription, it's an annual subscription, and they send the article on a monthly basis. Now it's like Substack is the one where a lot of individuals are basically writing. So Strategery is one, you know, newsletter which I read like religiously every day in the morning. So they send you an article, and his name is Ben something. I forgot his last name actually, and he's really good. He's very influential as well in Silicon Valley. The other thing is TechMeme, and TechMeme.com. If you go, you'll see all the tech news which is basically surfacing on the top. Third, LinkedIn. I mean, you'll see me very active on LinkedIn because I learn a lot from reading other posts, like what other marketing leaders are doing, what other tech leaders are thinking about. So those are basically, and obviously, like on the side, like I read the, I mean, as you can see, I haven't read all the books out here, but I have read most of them. So so those are the four things I do. But I will say this, Jivraj, like if you are following the playbook, which everyone else is doing, then how are you unique? So I think the point I'm trying to make is, yes, you should read about what's going on in the industry, but form your own opinion. I mean, that's the only way you're going to stand out, right? Like, how else are you going to be unique? Marketing is all about being unique and different. So if you're following the playbooks, which all the other marketing leaders are doing, then, you know, how are you unique to some extent?
Very interesting. I think that last point is food for thought. But as we discuss things, I think, of course, this also, I guess we'd love to deep dive into what really makes a marketer, right? You focused on a couple of things here and there that, you know, you have to be unique, have your own opinions, you have to keep up with trends, all of that, know the customer. But what do you think are some traits that truly highlight a good marketer and maybe also early signals to identify them? Because it's one thing to have skills, it's another thing to identify them or even portray them. So to anybody listening, what are those things that, you know, you look for when hiring, when identifying the next marketer that can make magic happen?
I think the first and foremost is communication. I don't think it's like your job as a marketeer, like when you're starting off in marketing, you do a lot of writing. And if you cannot write, when I say writing, I doesn't mean that you have to be like an author. You don't need to be Shakespeare, by the way. You just have to write in very simple terms, which a customer should be able to understand exactly what the product does, what is the value prop of the product is. So I think writing is like one of the writing slash communication is one of your most important skills as a marketeer. And I think a person who comes from the product side who can do that really, really well is a perfect future CMO to some extent, right? And the second skill set is using your right and left brain equally as a marketeer. I think you need to do that. You not only need to be like, and data is becoming more and more important nowadays. It's not as important 20 years back, but now it's super important, right? So you need to be an analytical person. At the same time, you need to like really enjoy the creative side of marketing. So those are the two I would like. I'm purely talking from a skill perspective, like a craft perspective, like identifying a marketeer in very simple terms. Like those are the two things I would look for.
Got it. Fair enough. Very, very useful. I think if you were to change gears now, Raj, would love to know from your lens as to considering that the next 5-10 years, and you've of course in the Valley seen this wave of startups come up, these companies which start off as a collective of 5-10, but then exponentially grow over a period of time. How do you differentiate between or understand marketing from a startup lens is what I'm trying to understand from you. Is there a major differentiation? Because at the start, I'm sure everything's blurred, but as they also say, you have to know the brand from the very start, you have to focus on it, all of that on one end. So what is your ideal combination? If early founders are listening to you, early teams are listening to you, what would you like to tell them when thinking of marketing for early stage companies?
Yeah, I think if you are a founder, I'm at a very early stage I'm talking about, right? I think most of your attention go into product and engineering. Not a lot of founders in the early days think about, you know, marketing, sales, or GTM. I think the companies which get successful, which pass into Series A and Series B are the founders who have that bent. There needs to be at least one founder who is basically thinking about marketing and sales. Because nowadays, it is becoming more and more important. Pick any space, Jivraj. Pick any space. You'll find that 20, 30, 40, 50 companies doing the exact same thing. Like, how do you stand out? You know, among the crowd. So, and the way you stand out is obviously product help. You need to have a product strategy, like how you're different from the other place. But also you have to communicate that vision to your potential customers. So don't ignore the marketing function early on. You don't need to hire, you know, a marketeer, but you need to start putting on the marketing hat, like the GTM hat, and thinking about, okay, what's my value prop? Like, what should I communicate? What are the benefits of my product? See, you need to start thinking early on, and please don't ignore that, because I've seen a lot of, like, a lot of founders basically focus a lot of their energy on the engineering and product side and not think about marketing.
Got it. I think that's very valuable in terms of prioritization. Taking that a step further, when can founders start building dedicated marketing teams, right? Since you spent time with a lot of early stage teams, what do you think is the right time? What size of company, what size of clientele? And if you were to restrict it to one context also, I understand, but any actionables there will be very useful, Raj.
Yeah, I think you need at least some product market fit before you, you know, hire your first marketeer, right? That can, I can vary. It can be 100K ARR, 500K ARR, depending on what your, you know, ACV is, a million ARR. But I think once you reach a million ARR, you need to start thinking about building out the marketing function. And what I usually suggest is start with the product marketeer. Because a product marketeer, I mean, the job is primarily to think about who is your buyer, you know, what are the needs of your buyer, how do you communicate to that buyer, what are the value props of your product, and kind of building out the website. Like, you probably have like a very early stage website, but building out the website so the website can function as your storefront, right, for your product. So that like 1 million ARR is potentially you hire a product marketeer, you basically start thinking about like investing very early stage product marketing. But I think like a full-fledged, like all the other functions, probably 10 million ARR, 5 to 10 million ARR is when you start thinking about, okay, do I need to, you know, hire, you know, growth marketeers, right? Do I need to hire my first brand marketing and things like that? Then you start building out all the other functions. Now, there are two things I say a lot to founders and CEOs, and you'll hear this if you listen to my other podcast as well. There are two things fundamental, which are important, becoming more and more important nowadays, which is kind of connected with marketing. The first one is the data platform. Invest in your data platform, because that's going to be, without having like a unified data platform, it's going to be super hard for you to do marketing and sales, right? Because data is basically your, can become your core differentiator in the long run. And the number two thing is investing in, you know, growth function early on, like have like a cross-functional, like product engineering funnel team. Obviously a marketeer as well should be part of the funnel team. And think about like optimizing your funnel from early on itself before you spend a single dime on marketing. So those are the two things I think what I would say are the foundation of building your GTM function in the long run.
Lovely. I think that's very useful. What I heard was a bit of PMF before you hire your first product marketeer, which is the way to start, and then a full-fledged function when you're 5, 10 million ARR. That's lovely. I think as actionable as it gets. The other aspect, and out of curiosity, I've always wondered how marketing teams are structured within organizations. Is it like a product function, which is very cross-dimensional in nature, requires help from all sides of the funnel, or is it more isolated in nature? Would love to know that. And also, especially in organizations where there are multiple vertical products, right? Does this marketing function remain horizontal where you are helping out all, or do you prefer building out core capabilities for each of those products? Would love to know from experience, if you can maybe bring in anecdotes as well as to how marketing gets organizational design, you know, how does that get shaped for marketing?
Yeah, there's the multiple layers to that question. So the way, first, fundamental thing, and because I think if you understand this, then you'll understand how the org structure is going to shape. I think the fundamental thing to think about is if you want to be really good at marketing, you basically need to do, I'm purely talking from a B2B perspective, you really need to do these three things really, really well. Number one is obviously growth marketing, or your basically your sales funnel, right? Number one. Number two, going up market, which is basically enterprise marketing. And number three, which basically connecting to my how B2B and B2C is coming closer, brand marketing. So these three is going to become your core pillars of your organization in the long run. On top, the way if you think about it, these are the vertical pillars. On top, you have product marketing, which is foundational. And then on the bottom is your, what I call your ops and analytics function. So those are the five pillars of your marketing org, the way I see it in the long run. Now, go to like my Atlassian 1Password, like I've talked to many CMOs, majority of the companies basically are structured like that. Now, to answer your second part of your question, what do you do if you have multiple products? Usually what happens is that product marketing function, if you have a business unit model that moves under the individual business units, I've seen that at Atlassian early days, and then you have a core marketing organization with those four pillars, which I talked about. Now, majority of the organization I've seen is goes through this phase from a functional model to a business unit model to a functional model, like various phases of of their life. Like Google, for example, when I joined Google, it went from business unit model to a functional model. Same thing happened when I joined Atlassian. I was part of the business unit, so it was a business unit model, and then it changed to a functional model because in the long run, as you scale the business, I think the functional model becomes more relevant and important for you to scale the business. So especially if you, like I'm talking about post IPO, right? These are like you're already at like 250 million ARR, and then what happens is usually the product marketing function is usually multiple. So for example, Atlassian, Jira, product marketing, Confluence, product marketing, each of those individually had product marketing. And then you have those brand marketing was central, you had a central self-serve marketing, you have central enterprise marketing, you had a central like ops and analytics function.
Got it. That's very helpful. I think that brings a lot of clarity to how marketing is structured in organizations. The other aspect is, the becoming a CEO is, of course, a 10-15 year journey in the making. How do you think career growth and navigation in marketing really works, right? What do you have to do year on year to actually get to a position where you can start shaping up things? What does being a leader in marketing really mean? I think that will be, again, a very interesting thought to hear from you, Raj.
Yeah, I usually advise, any marketer joining my team is not to do the same thing more than 2 years. Move yourself around a lot. And this is why I also lean towards when hiring, I call hiring athletes, like put them anywhere and they will be successful, right? You have to start somewhere. Like I as a marketer started at product marketing, right? And then I moved around, explored, put myself out there. So I think that's the fundamental advice if anyone who was like early on in their career starting marketing, what I would say is don't stay in the same role for a long time. Try something different. Try a different product. Try a different function. Put yourself out there because sometimes you get very comfortable in a role. You're like, okay, I'm doing this really, really well and I'm successful. Like, why I want to start, from scratch? But I think that's the most important thing to remember in your career journey, that you can't be a CMO unless you have exposure to different kinds of marketing, worked in different kind of products, sold to different kind of audiences. So I think practicing that early on in your career is going to help a lot. The second thing, I'm not going to confuse by giving a lot of advice, so I'm going to keep it very simple. The second thing, which for me has been fundamental shift from a career growth perspective, is when I started listening to feedback. Usually early on in your career, you're a little bit, arrogant. I know everything. So that is kind of holding you back in your career growth. So I think it's very important to actively seek out feedback from your peers, from your bosses, from your subordinates, and constantly, reinvent yourself. I think those are the two. If I have to give any feedback to a marketer, those are the two things I always say. Like, these are the two things you should do, to grow in your career.
Talk to us more about that. Taking feedback is not what we've fundamentally taught to do, which is why it becomes difficult to not only know how to, but also act on it when we do get feedback. Anything from observation that you can share as to how we can become better at it?
Yeah, I think let me use an example in my career itself, right? Atlassian. I think I remember there was an incident which happened, like, let's one and a half and 2 years into my career at Atlassian, and my boss came to me and said, "Hey, you should probably get a coach. It's a good time for you to get a leadership coach." I was just managing a team at that time, like small bitbucket team, and that fundamentally shifted my mindset so much, and it's triggered my growth since then, actually, to be honest with you. And what the coach did is very simple. He went out, talked to, I provided a list, and there was like my bosses, my subordinates, like people I managed, my peers, collected all this feedback and looked at the common theme across that feedback. It gave me, these are the fundamental things you need to change. And I took that feedback to heart, and it basically drastically changed my career trajectory at Atlassian after that. After that, I launched Stride. I managed like multiple products at the same time. All that happened after I, shift, like focus on feedback and, absorb that feedback and try to fundamentally change myself. A similar thing happened like just before I left, like a year and a half into, like there was feedback given to me. Like I was being very aggressive in meetings, and some of my peers hated me for that. Right. And I changed my fundamental model of how I worked. And again, that shifted, my career growth in the last 3 years as well. So I've become very open to feedback in general. And this is why, like, as a boss, it's always hard to get feedback. CMO, who will give feedback to a CMO? That's why I use the term radical candor a lot, because I think it's very, very important that, your team should feel comfortable to, raise, like, issues going on in the organization and should be able to come to you and talk to you. And that's why I talk a lot about servant leadership. You'll see these are the two fundamental pillars of my leadership, really radical kind of servant. Servant leadership is all about thinking about the hierarchy in the organization in an inverted way, where the CMO is actually at the bottom. And the people who are on the front lines are doing the work at the top. And your job primarily is to serve them. That's your job. Your job is to make them successful. So anyway, that's basically, I become as a CMO, I actively solicitly, solicit feedback for my team all the time. And usually I use my, HR or a third party to go and like get feedback for me, because there will be always feedback. There is always opportunity to improve yourself. Like no one is perfect in this world. Pick even a most successful CEO, you'll see that CEO is basically going out and getting feedback from his team.
Absolutely. That's phenomenal, Raj. I think thank you so much for sharing that. That puts a lot of things into perspective. We've discussed a bunch of things here, but anything in terms of, a lot of this can be prescriptive in nature, but any negating aspects, right? These are things to avoid as a marketeer. These are traits to not have, or things like that. Anything that you've seen as red flags through your career that you'd like to mention out loud?
Things not to do, basically. I kind of touched on it a little bit, like don't do the same thing for a long time. That number one. Number two, I would say don't play it safe. I mean, it's very easy to, and that's why one of the rituals I have in my team is celebrating failures. I think it's very important to fail. If you don't fail, you'll never be successful. So playing it safe means you'll never fail. I think it's important to fail. So that would be the second thing. My advice would be not to play it safe. And third is using your position as more for power, right? It's like what I say, top-down leadership, and that's not going to work in the next 15, 20 years. That is, you need to be more people-oriented. You need to make sure that you care about, genuinely care about the people in your team. And I think you'll fundamentally see, a shift, even from an output and productivity perspective, once you start doing that. So those are the three things I would say. Summarized, number one is don't stay in the same role for a long time. Number two, don't play it safe, take risk. And number three, don't do top-down leadership, practice own leadership. So those are the three things I would say.
Perfect. Perfect. I think that's very helpful. Covered a bunch of things in marketing. Going back to a bit of your journey, right? And the idea that we have in our heads is that most of the folks from India that move to the US end up doing, the tech roles, the product roles, mostly that in the US. But you've, of course, been, shown that this is also possible. What are your thoughts in terms of just having the right set of people around you so that you were able to do this? What do you think about this line of thought, and why is there a gap, or is it just outward looking?
I think the reason is first of all, you have to remember the people who are coming to the US, there are only two paths, right? One is going to college, so you're coming on F1 visa, and the second path is H1B. Now, H1B doesn't support hiring marketeers, right? Hiring engineers only. So that's why a lot of people who come here basically come in engineering roles, like especially people who are coming from India. But you see a lot of people actually post business school shift their careers and going more into on the business side. And there's so many examples. Marketing is a little bit different because I don't like, it is changing. Like there are a lot of people, CMOs who are from in, like who moved here from moved to the US from India, taking like a CMO roles, moving into marketing. I've seen that shift happening in the last 5 or 10 years. And you'll see that more happening. And the reason, primary reason is, like I said, marketing is becoming more data oriented. So you cannot just be a CMO being just being creative and not understand the data or the analytical side. And in India, basically, there are a lot of CMOs, like you just choose to go that route. But it, like financially, initially, it doesn't make sense. Like engineers get paid so much better than a marketeer. And that's why a lot of people choose in like going to engineering. You don't hear your mom saying, hey, mom and dad saying, hey, go into marketing. You, or it's either an engineer or a doctor, right? Those are the two things you hear a lot. But that is going to shift. That is going to fundamentally change a lot. As I think nowadays, you know, marketing is becoming more and more, I think one of the core marketing and sales, like GTM in general, is becoming one of the core functions of the organizations. Pick any vertical. I'm not just talking about tech. It's happening in all the other verticals as well. So we'll see that trend more in the near future.
Absolutely. I think that that's very helpful. As we conclude, right, there are multiple channels when it comes to marketing, right, of course, and there are more and more as we can think of it, time evolving. Is there something that you feel has worked out over the years and remains evergreen, be it SEO, be it content, be it, you know, brand building in different ways? What is your go-to marketing channel? And if you can just break down maybe channels for us and how do you think about them, I think that'll be helpful. Don't want to miss any part of the pie. So I think this will cover it entirely.
Sure. I talk about this in my, like I wrote a blog about this as well. I think any founder, like when you're building out the marketing org, I think you should start with the unpaid channel first. Like I initially said, like all you need to start doing marketing is a website and probably a social media account. That's it. Those are two things. And you should be able to write, right? And that in itself should basically start, you know, help you reach out to your customers. So I always start with unpaid channel. I'm a big fan of focusing on SEO and content because SEO and content can pay real good dividends in the long run. I mean, almost the way to think about it is you're investing in the long run. Like you're investing in building out your flywheel, marketing flywheel for the long run. So I always say to founders, like, hey, start with SEO, community, content. Like those are the things, the unpaid channels you should focus for. And then like once you reach like, you know, a certain size, you should start experimenting with paid. But paid, I think what has happened is if you look at the economics, the unit economics, paid works more for if you're going up market, like mid-market and enterprise. It doesn't work so well for SMB. So paid like comes quite after in your journey. So always invest, I would say invest in unpaid early on and then build out the paid. Now, brand marketing somehow, and I talk about it in B2B marketing is a bad word because brand marketing usually means doing TV ads and out of home. Nowadays, you can do brand marketing very easily. You don't need to spend millions of dollars to do brand marketing. So I have like few tricks I share in my Outbound Fury blog and in my talk, actually, which I did Blink on Traction at the beginning of this year. And you can see like there are more interesting and fun things you can do with your brand marketing, which can like think about it in a way like interesting content you're creating or controversial content you're creating or fun video you want to put it out on social media and which goes viral, right? So those are the things you can use basically to bring in more, you know, customers into your funnel. So that's the way I usually think about like building up the covering the channels, basically unpaid, paid, and then paid.
Got it, got it. It's fair. And I think the talk you were referring to is great. I came across that Ryan Reynolds ad of 1Password through that talk. And I'll put a link to that so that anybody who's interested can go there. To put things into perspective, if you can share your favorite marketers, brands, part of which you mentioned in that talk, of course, or even campaigns, right? Any of the above, some things that you feel, or maybe just observations from these that make you feel that, okay, this is aspirational as a marketer. I think that'll be helpful to know as well.
Nike and Apple, those are the two brands which come, you know, as soon as I think about like marketing, I talk about those two brands a lot. Nike does an extremely good job of connecting with their audiences, right? They don't necessarily celebrate wins, for example, right? They talk about, their tagline is just do it. It's all about finishing and participating. It's not about winning, which is like, if you think about it, brilliant tagline, right? You know, the world is an oyster because you're going after every possible, you know, person in the world. So, which I think is, and it's inspirational as well. Like some of the Nike ads, it's just blow your minds. Like after you see the ad, you're like, oh, maybe I should go and buy a running shoe and start running, right? So Nike does a really good. And the second thing is Apple. Go to their website, man. You feel an actual desire to buy the product. Some of the ads are amazing. Like billboard ads, if you look at, like when you drive down 101 in Silicon Valley, they have like a bunch of, and in New York now, I'm in New York, you see billboards all around you, right? The difference is in New York, you see tech is like a very small part. In Silicon Valley, it's all tech billboards, but here you get exposed to a lot of different, you know, billboards, like different products. So Apple does an extremely good job of making you really desire their product. You know, and they've created this premium brand, which is amazing, purely by the power of marketing. So those are the two brands I always talk about. Like, I'm a big fan of both of them, and I've learned a lot from both of them.
Absolutely. Love those. I mean, as a consumer, for sure. And I think this is great. And very interestingly, Raj, if not marketing, where would you be?
Travel. You know, my dream job is being Anthony Bourdain and working for the Travel Channel, like be like Anthony Bourdain and working for the Travel Channel. I mean, that would be like an amazing job for me. The second job, which is like, that is more like out there kind of a, you know, dream job, but like more realistic, is I would like really like working with founders. I really love like talking to founders. I really like to see that energy, like the glitter in the eyes when people are talking about like being passionate about, you know, how they're going to change a certain space, for example. So, you know, that like probably in like, that would be my, like, if I have to say like after marketing, what I'm going to do is basically probably go and like go into the VC world and work with founders. So those are the two things, you know.
Super. No, for any firms listening, this is going to be a big one.
Not right now.
No, I was just joking. But as we conclude, Raj, this has been very interesting. I'd love to know on the software side, right? I think these were all mostly software as well. There were technical stuff and there was qualitative. But if you had to talk to us about the growth journey that it has been for you personally, right? From that engineer who decided to go to business school and turn ways to marketing, what is the radical shift in your character as an individual through this journey? If you can maybe just talk us through that as we end, and any learnings along the way that maybe summarize the 10-15-year-old stint, I think that will be super helpful.
I mean, if there is, I like, seriously, I've tried to reinvent myself like at every point in the journey, and it's not only professional but personal as well. I think there are two things I think which has fundamentally shifted from my early days, is I have tried to become more a listener nowadays than a talker, though in podcast you can't do that. But in general, I think that's one of the shift which has happened. Like, I've tried to become more, it's very hard, you know, it's like being in a meeting, you always feel like, oh my god, I know the answer to this, I can answer this question. Like holding yourself back, especially in a leadership role, is always extremely hard. But I've tried to inculcate that a little bit, you know, and in my, not only in my professional, but even in my personal life. I think that has improved my relationship with my friends and family as well. So that's one thing. Number two thing is basically, which you cannot fake, is being, you know, caring about people, I would say. You care about your friends and family, but you hardly care. Like, I'm not saying that they're leaders, you won't find that they care about their team, but actually, I think if you fake it, it's going to become very obvious, but like genuinely caring about a team and seeing them being successful. That's why I enjoy being being a marketing leader. That's why I said, like, I would enjoy the operating role, because you can't do that in a VC role, for example, like seeing people grow. So those are the two things. And that has like kind of seeped into my personal life. It's always like friends and family. You generally care about your friends and family. And doing that in my professional life has helped me tremendously as well.
Beautiful. I think that's a perfect note to end at. That's not something that we hear very often, but that's the truth. And it's great that you laid it out for us. I've loved this conversation, Raj, since we've covered such a wide ambit of things, yet been very disciplined to understand more about marketing. Thank you so much for your time. I'm sure this is going to be super helpful for anyone listening. I certainly learned a lot, and I hope you had a good time today.
Oh, I had a great time, Devraj. Thanks for invitation to this podcast. And I'm looking forward to the end product.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Raj.
Thank you.
Awesome. With that, we come to the end of this conversation. Thank you so much for tuning into the episode. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you're finding value with the podcast, do follow it on the audio streaming platform of your choice. Drop in a review and subscribe to our WhatsApp newsletter to get all the updates directly on your inbox. Thanks again. I will see you next week for another episode. Till then, I hope you recall. If you never try, you'll never know. Stay tuned and keep building.